Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And space here, Okocha! Can he finish it? Okocha! It's 1-0 for Nigeria! One of the Super Eagles superstars gets the opening goal, known as JJ.
Hello, Ramblers. Andy here with another Ramble Meet. I'm very excited about this one. And dare I say it, you should be too, because my guest today, through that incredible goal against Karlsruhe, and yes, we do ask him about that, Fenerbahce, Paris Saint-Germain, Bolton and Hull, dance-offs with Big Sam. Yes, it's JJ Okocha, the one and only midfield royalty. Absolutely delightful company. He's got some great stories as well, and I'm really looking forward to bring it to you. This is Ramble Meets JJ Okocha.
So, JJ, obviously a lot of people in England have a lot of love for you. We'll come to the England bit in a bit, but let's start where your relationship with European football started. When you came over to Germany as a teenager, tell us about the story behind that.
Well, it was more like a coincidence. Because I went on holiday, but a friend of my brother's that I went to visit was playing for a third division club, Borussia Neunkirchen. So I went to training with him, and of course, I had my football shoes with me because I carried them everywhere I go. And I asked the manager if I could train with them. So he said, yeah, why not? And I think the rest is history because he kept me for like 2 weeks and then said that he would like to sign me.
So you do realise that when most people say that it's their childhood dream to play football, really everyone's childhood dream is they go on holiday, get spotted, and then end up playing football in that country. It's an incredible story. How was it adapting? And did it feel like you were still on holiday when you started playing there?
Well, no. I mean, when I realised that this is my new home now, you know, that was when everything was done on me, you know, that this is this could be a lifetime opportunity or a change that is required, you know, if you want to play abroad. So I realized quite early that it comes with a lot of sacrifice, you know, that it's a new chapter in my life, which if I take, you know, it could be a life-changing opportunity. So yeah, it wasn't easy, but I mean, I was focusing more on the success than the struggles that comes with it.
So you're at Neunkirchen for a couple of years before you get picked up by Eintracht Frankfurt, which is quite a leap to a club with a lot of history and a huge reputation. When do you realise, what's the point where you realise that this is happening, I'm going all the way to the Bundesliga?
Well, I think I didn't start my first season, I didn't start with the team, you know, because I came late. I played mainly, I think, second half of the season. And after that, a second division came for me, Saarbrücken. But I thought, according to the law of the league, I think you have to turn 18 before July, last day of July. But I turned 18 in August. So I wasn't old enough to sign a professional contract, you know. And I had a trial with Bayern, their youth team, and they wanted to sign me, but because of this regulation, they couldn't give me a professional contract. They couldn't even give me a contract. So I was like, I can't come to you without a contract. I can't leave or come all the way from Nigeria, stay in a club without a contract, you know. So what Frankfurt later on came and they understood perfectly how to beat that system, you know, if I may put it that way. So they first gave me an amateur contract
and okay.
A professional contract. So the amateur contract allowed me to play with their second team.
So that helped you get over not being able to sign for Bayern, because at the time that must have felt like a massive disappointment, surely.
Yes, I didn't realize how big Bayern was then. Yeah, I only realized later, you know, because I just had in my head to play for a bigger club, you know. So it was later that I realized, yeah, that maybe I should have gone there without contract. But yeah, signing for Frankfurt wasn't a mistake.
And you end up becoming a legend there. Tell us about how your relationship with the club and the city developed.
Well, I fell in love with the city because it is a multicultural city, and from day one, I got all the support that I needed. You know, yeah, I was just waiting for my opportunity to be able to play for the first team, and when it came, I took it. You know, and I think people or the fans, even the manager, he was surprised with my development. You know, so it was like I got the leap too early, you know. But yeah, I think once I got the opportunity, I never looked back. And I think the fans realized that I was playing from my heart. You know, I was giving everything. I think that was the main bond.
You talked about not realizing what a big deal Bayern was when they initially offered you. I mean, did you realize about the players around you? Because there were some huge players at Eintracht Frankfurt at the time, led by Tony Yeboah, of course. Did you realize that, you know, I'm going to have to be the best version of myself to get into this team that's got a lot of quality in it?
Well, yes, of course. I was aware of the names that were there, not just Yeboah, the Uwe Bein, Uli Stein, Ralf Weber, and all of them. You know, these were national team players. But I think my attitude towards football made me fearless. You know, I realized that, yeah, I have to respect them, but off the pitch, you know, on the pitch, I have to stand for myself. You know, I'm playing for my future. And on the pitch, I don't think that they need my respect. You know, what they needed was my sheep, you know. So, yeah, that was how I got my breakthrough and could get along with them, because they realized that I wasn't scared or whatever to go about my business.
So how did your family back home perceive all this? Because now I think we take for granted a little bit, JJ, the fact that, you know, if you've got an internet connection, you can see any game you want at any time. In the 90s, it wasn't like that. So how did your family at home keep in touch with what you were doing?
Well, at the beginning, it was through letters, you know, writing letters. Then it graduated to having a phone, you know. But then in Nigeria as well, people were limited to mobile phones. So it was more like landline, you know. and even my family, they didn't have landline, so they had to go to maybe the neighbors whenever.
Right.
I said that I will call, you know, I'll call the neighbor and tell the neighbor the time that I will call, and then they will go there and wait for my call. That was all we had then, you know. It didn't bother anybody because we didn't know better.
So what sort of reception did you get when you get back to Nigeria and you're part of the national team and, you know, all of a sudden you're a big star in European football and you're on the way? How do people perceive you differently when you go back to Nigeria in that time that you were with Eintracht?
Well, I think my whole life changed, you know, when I started playing for the first team. And when I went back home for the first time, I think that was when they realized that, yeah, I'm no longer the same person, you know. I'm now a big star in the country. I'm now known, you know, I'm popular. But I didn't know let all that get to me, you know, because I was still looking for more achievements, you know. So that didn't bother me at all.
Talking of achievements, we've got to mention that famous goal against Karlsruhe that people talk about again and again and again. And it still gets shown now. It's past Oliver Kahn, who I think made reference to it on social media quite recently, actually. Tell us about that goal and A, how it happened, and B, what it did for your profile.
Well, I think that was, maybe if I may put it this way, the game changer for me. You know, yes, I had already started playing for the first team. I was getting popular in Germany, but that goal, you know, blew my popularity across border, you know, because it was shown in different countries. And that was when people became aware of this young Nigerian player that is in Frankfurt. Everything changed after that goal. You know, and I always say that I was lucky because it wasn't really planned. You know, I never planned to hold on to the ball that long, you know, but it was like whenever I raise my head, I would see an opponent in front of me. But because of the kind of person I am, I was confident enough to kept it that long, you know, until I found the space that I was looking for. Well, yeah, it was a bit of risky as well. Because the manager told me, had it been I missed, maybe that would have been me done with the club.
Kommen Sie nah an den Monitoren und genießen Sie. Folgt ein Top-Highlight. Okocha, hier ist er. Okocha, JJ Okocha, immer noch. JJ Okocha, noch ein Dreher, noch einer und drin.
You know, you talked about the relationship you have with the fans. Do you think that spontaneity is what made them love you so much? Because the Bundesliga is a really special place to play football. It's something that people all over the world know now, but the atmosphere at the stadiums is really something, isn't it?
It is. It's unbelievable. They love their football and they love good football, not just football, you know. So I think in me they saw something different, you know, because I brought something different, maybe something that they've never seen before, you know, a young player expressing himself, you know, but for in a positive way, you know, for the team. And I think that was maybe the special bond.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So after the team went down in 96, you end up going to Fenerbahce. And if we're talking about fever for football, well, Turkey's on an entirely different level. And at one of the biggest Istanbul clubs, whether it's Fenerbahce or Galatasaray especially, the pressure is something else. Did that change you, having to deal with the pressure there?
Well, no, I think my time in Germany built me, you know, so I was ready when I got to Turkey. You know, I was already used to pressure. You know, I had already played in the World Cup. I just won an Olympic gold medal with Nigeria. You know, so I was more prepared. You know, I was already established. I always say that I went to Germany as a boy and I left as a man. And my school, I say the school or football school that I went in Germany was what guided me, you know, not just the rest of my career, but beyond football as well. Tarık ortada. Boric gidiyor. Buranın yanından geçti. Ceza sahasında. Geriye çıkarttı Antalya Sporları. Okoça. Atak sürüyor. Okoça. Geldi ve gol. Ve gol ve gol. Geldi Okoça. Fenerbahçe 2-0 öne geçiyor. Bir sihirbaz gibi o kalabalığın arasından topu avlara gönderiyor Okoça. And I mean, Fenerbahçe is something pretty special as well, isn't it? I mean, obviously it's on the Asian side of Istanbul, so you almost have the feeling when you cross from the European side to the Asian side of Istanbul, when you take that little boat over that takes what 10 minutes, that you're going into a different country. I mean, how does that govern the way that Fenerbahce supporters are and the atmosphere around the club? Because it's such a proud club, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it is something special, you know, to experience that derby, you know, because you rightly said, in as much as it's 10 minutes away from, they are 10 minutes away from each other, it's like defending your country, you know. The bragging right is unreal, you know, and the support that they give you when it comes to that derby match, you know, it's something that, it's like a footballer's dream, you know, to experience that kind of atmosphere. So it was something special. And I think if you're a professional football player, those are the games that you will pay to play. And, you know, so yeah, it was really special to be part of that derby match.
After that, how did the move to Paris Saint-Germain come about?
It was during the 98 World Cup in France, you know. I got a call and having been in France, you know, we played, I think, a game at Parc des Princes as well. You know, so that gave me an idea, you know, where I'll be going to if the deal works, you know. So, and of course, I had in mind also to play in a better league. You know, I didn't want to end my career in Turkey. You know, I felt like I still had a lot to offer, you know. And then Paris Saint-Germain provided me that opportunity, you know, which I took, you know, but it was really difficult to live in a bad.
And I suppose, like, when you came to Paris, they were coming off the back of an amazing era in which they did incredible things, especially in those big games at the Parc des Princes. And, you know, you look at players like Rai, Ginola, George Weah, players like that. And they weren't quite where they were now, obviously. Now, clearly a lot of money has gone into PSG since then. But going back then, did you see the potential, at least, for them to become one of the best clubs in Europe? Or did it still seem quite a long way off?
Well, I mean, thinking about the club's history then before I went, you know, it was one of the reasons why I signed for them, because I realized that they are very ambitious, you know. And I went there with the same ambition, you know, to try and match what previous teams I've achieved, you know. But unfortunately for me, I went there at the wrong time. there were too many changes. So I struggled to play with the same team, you know, year in, year out. And I think we all know how important it is for a team to be consistent. That consistency, both on the field and off the field, was not there. So that really, the platform, you know, to really feel at home was missing. Mm. But I think we've seen how ambitious they are and where they are now and what they've gone to achieve.
I guess another player who you might say ended up in Paris at sort of the wrong time or before that time is Ronaldinho, who ended up becoming a huge star in Europe. And he says when he came to Europe for the first time from Brazil to France, that you were sort of a mentor for him. How was your relationship with him and how did you manage to help him, do you think?
Well, I think I quickly realized that he's got something special, you know. And he was getting frustrated because he wasn't playing regularly at the beginning, you know. So having gone through that before, you know, myself, I knew how difficult it was for me when I started my career in Germany. So I was talking to him, you know, trying to help him any way I can, you know, to give him that confidence or that courage that it's just a matter of time, you know, for him to stamp his authority. And I'm glad that he went on and became the best player in the world at some point, you know. So that was just our relationship.
Es una oportunidad para Ronaldinho. Quiere buscar el gol del empate. ¡Cuál disparo! Gol del conjunto local del Belle. Ococha con un gesto realmente extraño que estaba haciendo.
So when it finishes in Paris, I guess you're weighing up your options. Tell us about when you heard about the offer from Bolton and what made up your mind to go there.
I've always wanted to play in the Premier League, you know. Even though I had an opportunity, if I can remember, maybe 1994 or 95 from Southampton, but I didn't really fancy Southampton then. I think I was having an amazing time in Frankfurt and leaving the club was not an option for me. But later on, yeah, I had the desire, you know, to test the Premier League and see if I could find my fit there. And at that moment, Bolton came for me. And when I met Sam, he made it clear what he wanted from me, you know. And to be honest, I didn't even make my research. I didn't bother checking out how big or how small the club were then, you know. So it was when I got to Bolton, when I had already signed and got to the training ground, that I realized that it might not have been the best decision ever, you know, having to leave Paris for Bolton, you know, wasn't really the best when it comes to City, the best decision. But then I would say that my family and I, we quickly settled at Bolton and had such an amazing time there.
So Sam must have been super convincing then. I mean, I always wondered at the time, how did, as you say, Bolton is a club with history, but it's not the most glamorous club in the world, particularly if you put it next to Paris or Barcelona or whatever. He must have been so convincing to get not just you to come, but Djorkaeff, Ivan Campo, Fernando Hierro. What was it that Sam Allardyce had that made you feel that, yeah, I'm in with this guy?
I think he was honest, you know. His honesty, you know, he didn't really portray himself or the club as being the best in England or one of the best. Far from it. But, you know, when a manager is hungry for success, you know, and you see that there's a possibility of you helping him out, you know, to get to where he wants to be, you know, because he made it clear that the longer we stay in the Premier League, the better the club will get, you know, and he needs people like us to attract other players, you know, to attract good players. And, I think I bought into it, you know, and I'm glad that things worked out the way we planned, you know, planned it. And it's a shame to see where they are now.
Well, people talk about, you were talking about ambition before, and I think sometimes with Sam Allardyce, people think, oh, he plays a certain type of football, a direct type of football. But firstly, he had players like you and Yuri Djorkaeff. And secondly, he used a lot of science, like before a lot of other coaches did, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's not scared to experiment. I mean, like you rightly said, nobody would have thought that I would fit into Sam Allardyce's philosophy, football philosophy, you know. But then we had that understanding, you know. I quickly realized that he had never managed a big club. He had never played or compete, you know, on a very high level, you know. So, yes, some of his philosophy I adopted, you know, and then I managed to convince him that if we get the balance right, you know, that in the final third, you know, something different could work for us, you know. And he gave it a try, and it really worked. Because, like I said, when I first got there, I was wild with even the tactical play and all that, you know. But I had to ask questions, you know. But his philosophy was the quickest route to the goal, you know. And he said that he doesn't like players fanning about at the back, you know. He gives him heart attack, you know. So I might give him heart attack. So yeah. So yeah.
So what was your favorite moment at Bolton then, JJ?
My favorite moment was I would say the my first season, you know, surviving. Because it was a great experience for me, you know, realizing that the future of the club relies on maybe 20 odd players, you know, and it got to the point that I think players were the ones picking everybody up, you know, because. You could sense the fear, you know, the fear in the club representatives, the fans, you know, they were all scared. But at the end of the day, I realized that we should not be scared, you know. We, the players, should be the ones to lift everybody up and make them believe in us that we can do it, you know. And that was what we did. So it was a special moment for me because I remember going down with Frankfurt, which I didn't really understand the impact, you know, because I moved on, you know. But then at Bolton, I was a lot mature. And yeah, you have to realize also that it's not just you. At that moment, you know, it might be easy for you to move on. But what about the less fortunate players, you know, or the manager or the club, you know, what would be their future? So it makes you to give extra shift, you know, to try and save the club.
But it feels like you thrived off that moment of high pressure, that that you're almost made for it?
Well, yes. I mean, football, it's a pressure game. And if you understand it, it's when you're needed the most that you should be counted on, you know. It's easier when things are flowing, you know, to join in. You know, but then when you have to take responsibility, I think that's when you have to show your quality and your mental strength.
Open to Bolton. But it will be Okocha. Oh, he scored! Thomas Sørensen completely rock-footed. And JJ Okocha's decision to stay on and play in this semi-final first leg has been very, very quickly justified. The wall was ineffective, but the free kick was absolutely lethal from the Nigerian superstar.
What about now, as a spectator, when you see the Bundesliga, and especially with the fans coming back into the stadiums, does it give you good memories of when you were a player there? And what do you make of the current Bundesliga?
Oh, they've taken it to another level. I mean, you can see how competitive the league is, even though Bayern still dominates in a way, but it's getting a lot tougher for them, you know. Yeah, and every game is special. And most of the games, you can't really predict. That's the beauty of the league, you know, and the way the fans support their teams, you know, the way the league is structured, the opportunities that are there for young players, you know, they keep producing new talents every season, you know. For me, it's second to none in Europe. So, yeah. As a fan now, I enjoy watching Bundesliga.
So, what about Eintracht? What do you make of them? I mean, they've had some good seasons recently. Unfortunately, when they do have good seasons, they always end up losing a couple of big forward players at the end. You had André Silva go at the end of last season. You go back to the last fantastic team under Adi Hütter, and they lost Rebic and Sebastian Haller and Jovic. But the fans there, I think we saw on that Europa League run, are spectacular, even by Bundesliga standards. So where do you see Eintracht being at the moment as a fan?
Well, it's a big worry for me, to be honest, you know, to see that they let their best players go. Yeah, I mean, if you want to stay on top there, you know, to if you want to compete every season in finishing top four, you have to keep your best players. You have to build around them, you know. And I think you're weakening the team by selling your best players. I think I'm a bit worried, like I said before, to see how they will do this season, because if you make your club a shopping mall, you know, then you never can tell the next goods that you will receive, if it will be good enough, you know. So yeah, that's a bit of concern for me, you know. But to be honest, they've done really well in recent years.
Thanks so much to the great JJ Okocha for joining us. What an absolute pleasure and a privilege that was. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on Ramble Meets. Lots more interesting interviewees to come.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.